The side effects for the Moderna vaccine sound concerning. We looked. After the second dose, at least 80% of participants experienced a systemic side effect, ranging from severe chills to fevers. So are these vaccines safe?
Well, the FDA, not being pressured, will look hard at that. The FDA is the gold standard of regulators, and their current guidance on this, if they stick with that, is very, very appropriate. And, you know, the side effects were not super severe. That is, it didn't cause permanent health problems for the things that are. They, you know, Moderna did have to go with a fairly high dose. And so, you know, to get the antibodies, some of the other vaccines are going able to go with lower doses to get responses that are pretty high, including the J&J and the Pfizer. And so there's a lot of characteristics of these vaccines. It's great that we have multiple of them that are going out there. And yes, I think
you know the data better than I do. But the data showed that everybody with a high dose had a side effect.
Yeah, but some of that is not dramatic, where, you know, it's just, you know, super painful. But yes, there we need to make sure there's not severe side effects.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Friday, February 5th, 2021. Thank you for joining me today. Really, you know, sound, blanking on the word for what Bill Gates was doing right there. Representation of what's going on with these vaccines really makes you feel good about it, right? Like, you can trust that that's the answer that he didn't give, apparently. But today, that's an old clip, just so you know, we played that before. But today we're going to talk about just a couple of things, just two topics. Now, I know there's a lot of people out there that watch this show, probably even most of them, that love the long form, the in-depth discussion. That will never go away. But I also understand the point of this show is, again, not just to talk and inform the people that already understand what we're getting at, but to make it to where it can actually be the bridge between the people that are waking up to what's going on but don't know where to go and to the independent information, right? That's the whole point of this show. So I'm going to do my best. Today will be an obvious example. It will be much, much shorter than usual. And I will do my best to try to get these down to a, you know, digestible size. But of course, it's going to be difficult because I pushed off a whole lot of important stuff today. Another very big mask discussion, another big study that came out, lots of huge stuff on lockdown information. At some point, the problem is that things will fall through the cracks. I can't cover everything if I'm doing shorter shows to reach the most people, but it's a balance. It always is. So as I take this much time opening it up with the discussion, I want you guys to understand that I am hearing you. I do my best to make this fit for everybody the best it can, because it's about all of us, right? It's not just about some or the other. It's about everybody. And so as well as trying to contact people right now, I've reached out to a few people to help me clip these up every single time so it's easy for it to get out. But today we're going to be talking about, as I call, the CDC sleight of hand, which you may be thinking, which one, Ryan? And that's a good question to ask, since I've talked about exactly that kind of idea more than once. Today is about something that I happened to catch on somebody's comment on Twitter discussing this, calling it out, and I'm going to give him credit for it when we get there. A really good catch here that I haven't seen anybody else point to, at least not myself, in regard to how we saw, or at least potentially how, we saw this massive hundreds of thousands of deaths all of a sudden added on at the last, you know, basically in the first days of 2021, that they're claiming was, oh, it was 2020, and that's where, there you go, it's way over the top. But remember, even with those extra deaths, it's still equivalent to previous years in 2020, and same with everywhere else. That's why they're suddenly not talking about the overall mortality anymore. They just quietly put it away because it doesn't say what they kept telling you that it would. But today we're going to show you an interesting shifting of dates, as well as some other things we've continued to point to that obviously are suspect, that should make you fall out of your chair for multiple reasons, and you'll see why. We're also going to talk about, after that, shifting definitions, but finally, really interestingly, how it all kind of ties back in with what we've already talked about, but reiterating today, ID 2020, and the really alarming way that they basically laid this out before COVID was happening. And you'll see what I mean when we get into it. But to start, I wanted to show you something that I, again, already showed you. Today is sort of an overview. Today is more of an experiment with how I can keep this not very long. And I'm already not doing very well, but let's get off to this. This is an interesting thing that I've shown you in the past from the UK government. This is gov.uk. And again, a lot of these things people just kind of, I saw floating on Twitter again today and other platforms. And it's incredible to me that this can have, we have already discussed so many things, in my opinion, that just completely shatter what this is today. And it's like you forget about these pieces all of a sudden. It's really crazy. I think I talked about this back, and I'm pretty sure it was in, June 17th. That doesn't sound, probably a couple months after that, I think, I talked about this. But it was well before where we are now. This is from the UK, high consequence infectious diseases. Right here, it says, the status of COVID-19. Now, this is not some kind of a fake, or this is directly from the UK government website, and this has not gone away all the way since June of 2020. Last updated. It's still there. They know it. Here's what it says. As of March 19th, 2020, COVID-19 is no longer considered to be a high consequence infectious disease in the UK, which is really crazy. It was crazy then, but it's even crazier now as we watch them turn this place. They're more strict in the UK than a lot of places we can look at right now. People being arrested for being outside of their home. And yet they're the ones telling us that this is not that severe. I mean, think about that. Somebody's asking, I'm glad I saw this out of the corner of my eye. I am on Twitter, guys. It's funny that I'm trying to be secret and kind of interesting about this, but understand, I'm sure they well know by now, but you should be following me on Twitter right here. Okay. This is the count that you should be following. if I open a TLAV account on Twitter, they'll remove it. They've already done that, even though they've never even given me a justification. So just for those that want to keep following the Last American Vagabond on Twitter, here's where you do it. Just so you know, I'm glad I saw that. I wanted to make sure we pointed that out. Now back to this. So right off the bat, we're talking about something being no longer considered a high consequence disease. Now you may think, well, there's different categories. Maybe there's an explanation. Well, maybe, but here's what it literally says. This was based on consideration of the UK HCID criteria. So their own criteria about the virus and the disease with information available during the early stages of the outbreak. Now that more is known about COVID-19, I'll just read the middle part. The public health bodies in the UK have reviewed the most up-to-date information about COVID-19 against the criteria. They have determined that several features now have changed. In particular, more information is available about mortality rates. Low overall. The point is that that's not a secret. Right? They will never say it that clearly because they want you to be afraid of what's going on. But they're taking the mortality rate that is crazy high above 80. And that's, I would argue, very clearly because of what's happening in these nursing homes and the way that this has all been done, which that's why over 70% of these deaths are from nursing homes, and of them, over them are over 90% or over 80. It's ridiculous. That shows you in and of itself. Another one of those data points that shows you this is not what they're saying it is. But when you look at it directly overall, yes, it is low overall, dramatically low, lower than most others overall. And then you remove the 80 part of it over, and then it's basically not there. But that's the point. Here is the UK government telling you that they've removed the status to it's not considered a high consequence infectious disease. Yet they're willing to put people in jail. They're willing to continue to manipulate your life and restrict your life and destroy your job. Literally take away everything that you thought you had in regard to rights and freedoms and liberty without, because it's not a high consequence disease. It's just ridiculous. But so the point is, this is to set the stage from June 17th that apparently wasn't enough to stop them from still on the news claiming it's the biggest pandemic in a century, despite your government telling you that it's not. I don't know how that even possibly makes sense, but to go forward with the idea of the illusion of how obviously they can have contradictory information right in your face, or change things, manipulate things, or have the stated case be that it's not that dangerous, yet continue to act like it is. This is a case, this is an example of something that I thought was outrageous. I almost couldn't understand what I was seeing at first because I was like, it can't be that simple. Thank you, Nick Hobson, for pointing this out. Use the Wayback Machine to check out. And I always recommend we use the Wayback Machine, but I'm very, today especially, suspicious of it because of the way that they have, the Wayback Machine itself has already shown to censor things. And that makes me really concerned about how they might manipulate things, not just remove them, but change them in a way that suits their agenda and so on. They being the hierarchy enslaving you. But it says, use the Wayback Machine to check out CDC page that supposedly shows the data dump that we've talked about of more than 260,000 deaths early in 2021. Links and screenshots. Now, he says, spot the difference in the start date. That's the real cause of the data dump. Now, it's his statement, and I agree, but I don't, you know, can't prove that that is in fact what it came from, but it's a no-brainer in my opinion. Now, here is the Wayback Machine. For those who don't know, it's an archive site on the internet for you to save versions of old websites, even if they changed them. This is, as you can see up top, I'll make sure you guys can see that. Yeah, January 1st, right up here. January 1st, okay, 2021. Now, you can see up here, it says week ending 2/1/2020 to 12/26, right? So we're talking about the entire year starting from February 1st. Now, what this is about, so we can see the full information, is this is deaths involving coronavirus disease and pneumonia and influenza. Just so we're clear on that, that's not a secret. So we're combining all three of these things, and it's not differentiating between whether or not they were, they talk about it generally as secondary things, but this is why we laughingly talk about how, wow, flu doesn't exist this year. How stupid must they think we are? I mean, that's obvious. There are clearly cases that are flu that are being blended in with COVID-19. Same with pneumonia and the bacterial pneumonia that the masks are causing. It's all over the place. And they're telling you right there that they'll combine all three of them and tell you that that is the number that you should listen to in regard to how dangerous COVID-19 is. That's what this is. This, I mean, so we can see this is right on the CDC website in regard to what we're talking about. Now, the point is February 1st. Now, right off the bat, I'm thinking, wait a minute, February 1st. I mean, do you guys not, before we even get into the point, do you guys not also think it's interesting that February 1st, the CDC is claiming people were already dying from COVID-19? Think back to what was happening on February 1st. They were still quibbling about what was happening in China. We hadn't even got to the point where Trump says they didn't let us know. So now we're saying that they're either backhandedly, quietly admitting that people were dying from COVID-19 before they said it was in China, or before they said it was in the US at the very least. Or they're just moving dates around without having any real justification for why. So before we even change the date, that seems suspect to me. But here's the point he's making. You go back to you go from January 1st to January 8th. Notice the change? 2/1/2020. Suddenly it becomes 1/4/2020. Weird. Suddenly the date that we've been basing this entire number of total deaths on for that category, that period of time for COVID-19, was suddenly shifted for an entire month. Did anybody talk about that? Did they inform everybody that we added a month on to the field of information that we were categorizing? No one said anything. But on top of that, now ask the question. Were people dying from COVID-19 January 4th, 2020? Anybody? I mean, does that even make sense with what we're being told? Somebody's saying it's all blurred in the chat. It looks pretty clear to me. Let me know if anybody else thinks it looks blurred. I can't actually do this, though. Oh, that's that. That'll be about the same. So let me know if it looks too blurred. It looks okay to me. But if they're telling us that people died from COVID-19 in the beginning of January, that challenges the entire narrative. That also challenges whether or not they keep claiming that it started in China. I honestly don't think that's necessarily what they're doing. I don't think that they're actually admitting that, yes, people died. You mean then it would go all the way back. Then it would be also January, December of the year before. I think this is about adding the deaths. So what they did, in my opinion, was added on a whole nother month, not of COVID-19, but of the other two that they're including and that they're telling you they're including. So they added on an entire month of pneumonia and flu and other things. Now, on top of that, I do believe that what was happening at that point was really crazy. I mean, here, I can just grab it for you really quickly since it's important to remember. This is the view of this data right here. is pretty intense when you go back in the year before. Now, this is before COVID-19, but this is the time frame we're talking about. So, but again, remember, since I've talked about this in the past, I definitely think that this was something that was going on. No more than the flu in regard to how severe and dangerous, but it was everywhere. And I definitely think that whatever this is, was this, and it was happening here in the United States back in 2019. And then all the way into 2020 in the beginning. And this is right here. Let's get to the date so you can see what I'm talking about. Right? I mean, look at where we are right there. December 21st. That's crazy. Even worse, December 28th, January 4th. Right? So we can see right at that time frame, this is really intense. I mean, there's a lot going on. So if you're going to ask how many deaths were being caused by all of this, you can add on quite a bit with pneumonia and flu. But then you also add on all the other aspects that they're using to increase all of this. My point nonetheless is, regardless of how much it added, we know that absolutely beyond a doubt added a lot. An entire month. From February, suddenly January, you're adding on a whole bunch of all the deaths. We know that they weren't deaths from COVID based on their narrative. We don't know that, but we know it based on their narrative, that there was no deaths up until whenever they told us it started. But yet they're adding on all this back end, and including pneumonia and flu, and we know for sure. This is the up-to-date. I want to show you even more so now that it says 1/30/2021, that they also just added 3 more days after the fact. This is as of today, understand. So this was as of January 8th, where it says 1/4/2020. Right there, they just even went back even further. Now it says 1/1. Why not go back to 2019? Right? I mean, at this point, what's guiding them? Are they just get to continue to open more dates up and just pretend that those dates include COVID-19 in some way until it gets to a number that makes sense to their narrative? This is the kind of wishy-washy nonsense that's not guided by any facts or science that we've continued to see in this entire damn narrative. And it is unbelievable how obviously that there's no real, I guess, oversight, control. I mean, there's nobody in this situation that is looking at this and going, whoa, wait a minute, that's not okay. It's a free-for-all. And all of them are doing it at your expense and continuing to use these numbers, pneumonia and flu numbers, and combining and changing months and lying about dates and every other thing they're doing, from PCR tests and false positives to everything, and telling you that you have to do what they say based on that fear-mongering number, even though they'll tell you that it's not accurate. It's crazy. Now, we can talk about the next point in regard to how we know that these nursing homes, and by the direction of the government entities, created what they, I mean, look, if we know for sure right now, based on their numbers, that under 60, 70, I mean, it dramatically drops. And you get over, and the numbers they use is over 80, but I've seen things changing. But the point is, you get over 80, you get in nursing homes, you get comorbidities, that's where the numbers start happening. Then you start asking yourself, what if they hadn't done what they did with these nursing homes? Would that still be happening? Would we still have that high number if they wouldn't have intubated people when they knew that 98%+ people were dying after being intubated? Would that still have been then? Maybe not. Maybe this was so orchestrated that we can literally look at how the numbers point to the nursing homes and point to the comorbidities and then points to their putting people there, their actions around it. And that's why we're seeing things like this. Cuomo dealt another blow on New York nursing home death controversy. This was as of February 3rd. Now, this is interesting because what's happening, he's essentially trying to hide what happened. It's not a secret around the world. I mean, in Sweden, we have the similar situation. This all seems to have been focused on places like elderly, like nursing homes, people with comorbidities, that's the situation that seems to have driven the numbers. So now that he's trying to hide it, it even looks more suspicious. But it gets even worse. Not only is he hiding it, but he's actually trying to now go back in and undermine the numbers so it doesn't even look like most happened there. But we know this already. That's why he's trying to keep the information private. But a New York Supreme Court judge ordered the state health department to release records showing the full count of coronavirus deaths among nursing home residents. Why would that be something that they... I mean, why is it not public knowledge? Think about how crazy it is that they're actively keeping this information from your view and telling you that's what, for your safety? To stop conspiracy theorists from misunderstanding the information? I mean, it's getting wild the way that they're justifying these obviously dishonest actions. Now, it says the ruling was the latest blow to Governor Andrew Cuomo, who has tried to deflect a barrage of criticism that state policies under his leadership, it's a generous word, led to an increase of COVID-19-related deaths. Or led to deaths. under the guise of COVID-19. You can take it however you want. I mean, look, if we're going to pretend like somebody who was told they had a COVID-19 because of a PCR test that has potentially 95% positive with the level which they were testing with the cycle threshold, as Dr. Scoglio, PhD, and numerous others have absolutely stated, and then they say, well, you've got COVID-19. Well, you already have issues with this and that, and so it looks like you're already struggling. We're going to get you on an intubator, or we're going to get you intubated with a ventilator for your safety, and then kill them, or put them in a position where they're isolated from everyone they know, they don't have any contact, they're told they're going to die, and so they get really sick and they die into the corner. I mean, we've talked about this before. When you're at that age, when you're at a point when you don't, to put it simply, as I said the other day, studies have shown that a simple houseplant in the room of somebody that age will extend their life exponentially, because it gives them something to care about, to think about, to water, to nurse. But when you put them in a room that they're unfamiliar with, away from their family, and tell them they're sick and tell them they're in danger, so their cortisol is pumping, that's a guaranteed way. So you can see how this was, whether accidentally or not, driven this way, and how that should reflect on whether these overall numbers are even there. It says, last week, Attorney General Letitia James released a report alleging the Cuomo administration undercounted COVID-19 deaths in nursing homes specifically by as much as 50%, and may have obscured data available to assess the risk to patients. So understand, this isn't undercounting the deaths in general. It's saying, well, no, those were deaths over here, not in nursing homes, and he was, according to her, lying about it. Why would you do that exactly? Because you're trying to cover up the reality. But then, even worse, it says it may have obscured data available to assess the risk to patients. So not only are you, by covering up what you did, you're continuing to put those people at risk. This is what politicians are, guys. They will hurt you continually, even in the same way they just claimed they didn't, in order to hide that they broke the law. These are criminals, people. That's how these people operate. Now, I don't know, it's not everyone everywhere, but if you're going to pretend like these actions aren't criminal actions, I don't know what you're looking at. Talk about worrying about people's lives. This person killed all these people by negligence, by malfeasance, however you want to talk about it. On Wednesday, Acting Supreme Court Justice Kimberly O'Connor said that the health department violated state law by not providing data in response to a FOIA request. Right? As I always laugh about, like, the Freedom of Information Act, yes, it gives us all this ability. They just go, well, I don't care about that. In this case, he's getting called out for it. But you know how many times people request things they just ignore? Because the people requesting them don't have any pull. These are hollow gestures, right? Sometimes it has worked for us, but the reality is, in most cases, people that think he can do what he just did here. But yes, he is getting called out for it, so sometimes it comes out to bite them. But it says, not providing data for response to a FOIA request from the Empire Center for Public Policy, a fiscally conservative think tank in Albany. O'Connor gave the department 5 days to provide the requested information, which includes the number of patients who died inside and outside nursing home facilities. Now, we'll have to wait and see what happens. I think it's going to be pretty damning once he gets forced to release this, but who knows if he actually will, because I think they're nipping at the bud of something a lot grander than they realize, and somebody else will step in to save the day. But the reality is, the media, in every sense, will actively cover up what's really happening and slant it the way that they want it to look. And we've seen that in every case. I'm starting to believe the media itself, even more than Silicon Valley and these entities, are the ones creating the illusion more than anything. And we've always known that. But I mean, at this point, I'm really was wondering which one, whether the media was towing the line or it's the other way around. It's clear that they have such power to even once we know they're lying to us, to continue to shape the illusion. It's crazy. But to continue the illusion idea, it blows my mind that we can sit here and act like if you don't social distance and put a mask on and all this, then everyone's going to die. And if you don't do that, you don't care about anybody's lives, as we're watching something like Sweden play out, where you can watch these people living their lives. It's just incredible. And this is what I keep saying from the beginning to all the, what I'm speaking to when I say this is people out there who are on the fence, not people that are thinking we're crazy and you're going to wear a mask just because you're told to, and that's enough for you. I'm speaking to the vast majority out there that maybe are wearing a mask, maybe are distancing, but because they don't know whether the truth is this or not, because they're questioning it or not. But my point is, those that are like that, just in the beginning, like I told you, as we're watching Sweden, as people are wandering around at the mall and going out and doing what they're doing, if you knew that this was going to be this way forever, and it was not just a temporary thing to get back to some quote-unquote normal, would you still be doing it? I know the answer is no. I know it. So my point is, recognize that they're telling you this won't go away. This is what is going to happen forever. Now, one of the things I put off in regard to the mask discussion, which, by the way, I'm going to try to do a really early show tomorrow and get onto that, is that they're now telling you. They're doctors saying, look, guys, this is the new normal. I mean, they're not even like just saying this is the norm now. That's what I think the way he said it. Masks are the norm now. Not just for now, not just because of COVID, but just because we're smart now and we realize that that's necessary. That's how they're framing it. So again, if you knew this was not going to go away because they're telling you it won't, would you keep complying? Are you going to live the rest of your life wearing a mask that is absolutely causing lots of bacterial infections and all kinds of damage to your teeth and your face and causing illness and causing all kinds of other things and not actually having the effect they tell you it does based on numerous doctors and PhDs and everything else we've talked about, random controlled trials? And keep being distant from your family, not spending Christmases together, acting like human contact is now the antithesis of everything that we are. I mean, it's incredible. But the point is, how can people live like this? How can people be walking around, going to the store? I mean, and by the way, you watched, I don't think I saw a single mask or a social distance, this entire video of this guy walking for 5 minutes through an entire mall. Or I think this is a 2-minute clip, but the point is, the idea is that if that was the case, or what, if what they're telling us was the case, that this is the greatest pandemic in a century, and we're told they have cases there, so it's not like it's just not there. So if that was the truth, then this wouldn't be the case. You would not be seeing something like this. Or maybe they would go, well, just wait, it's going to spread. Well, no, this has been happening since the beginning. 9 months we've seen videos of them continuing to walk around. And by the way, no, they didn't do an entire lockdown and everybody was controlled. That didn't happen. They're misrepresenting the situation. Does that look like a lockdown to you? They were offered restrictions. They said, look, this is going on. We recommend you wear masks. We recommend you distance. We recommend if you're sick, you stay home. And I have seen there's some situations where people that were sick that they tested or so on, that we're told that they had to do this or that. And I disagree with that. But this is an overall situation about healthy people not being forced into quarantine, not being forced to mask or forced to distance. And this is not exploding into a COVID hotspot around in all of Sweden. It's just not. I don't understand how that can be the case if it's the greatest pandemic in a century and they're not doing what they have to do or you'll die. Please, somebody explain that to me. The answer is that it's not actually what we're being told it is, whether your health officials know that or not. And I strongly believe a lot of them just don't know it and are actually just being snowed by the people in the WHO, by the governments that are playing their part, by the unelected power structure. But a lot of them are also recognizing an obvious way to grab power, to grab money, to control you. But as I said, Sweden is a perfect example of why masking and involuntary isolation is the only choice. Can't you tell by all the normal everyday actions? Oh, excuse me, the suffering and chaos currently everywhere in Sweden. Just look, the horror. They'll keep telling you that. They will keep telling you that. Or how about something like this? COVID detainment facilities go from conspiracy theory to official government policy in 3 months. This is how it continues to go. I was censored for talking about things that are now 100% fact, even in the mainstream circles. I was censored for talking about things that are directly cited in CDC policy and CDC documentation. Why? Because I talked about them before they were supposed to be talked about. It's incredible. I mean, you guys watch this show, you know. The problem is that you guys that already know are not the ones that need to be convinced. But the point is that we go through source material. And sure, anybody can make a mistake. But the idea is that we're talking about the way that we're conducting ourselves is it's in no way, in any way, shape, or form, does it violate any policy on Twitter, on YouTube, any of it. They just don't like the truth that we're getting to. But in this case, it's the best example for those that are screaming that this is not real. They said this was fake news. I mean, you can see the headline right there. The mainstream media came out and flipped out about this because one of their members of parliament came out and read the document and said, this is crazy. And they all laughed at him. Like it was what a conspiracy theory. He was reading legislation, and they literally laughed at him either because they thought he was lying or they knew he wasn't supposed to talk about it. And their mandate was to pretend like it was fake. But the point is we see that it's real, guys. It's happening. I've reported countless stories about mothers and sons and daughters being arrested for simply being in Ontario. That's it. Whether they have a test or not. And they're arrested for 14 days. You can call it quarantine, they're arresting you. They are putting you in a jail cell for 14 days. Call it a hotel with bars in the window. You can live in the reality you want. But that was fake news up until it happened. Just like immunity passports that were always, they're still fake news, even though they're already being built. This is what your media is doing. Your media, the media. And the point is that we need to recognize how obvious it is. Here's another really upsetting example, but not from even COVID-19, to show you that they've always been doing this, as you mostly know. 2010, a child suffers a head injury from a sledding accident. 2018, CBC recycles the picture to make it look like he was hospitalized due to flu complications. Just in case anyone needs further confirmation that the mainstream media lies right to your face. It's a perfect analogy for, you know, why would you need to lie about flu complications? Well, there's an agenda. There always has been. And as Dr. Toby Rogers, PhD, points out, got it. And first of all, the article for the podcast says, new report finds toxic heavy metals in popular baby foods. FDA failed to warn consumers of risk. Really? Like, it's like they want you to see as, and he clearly sees it. Got it. Now do vaccines. Really? Like, you're going to quibble about heavy metals and baby food? Like, that's a big, and it is a big deal, but you're going to point to that like it matters, but then ignore the other heavy metals in the vaccines. And we know that they're there and they actually justify that they're there, but they're okay there, but not in this food though. Later when they're older. I mean, that's unbelievable. And now, never a better time than that kind of a comment to make sure we reiterate what Dr. Larry Plovsky. See, I think I said this incorrectly last time. Plevsky, I think. I think I was calling him Plovlovsky. In any case, a very intelligent person that spoke in front of Congress in February of 2020 telling you that these vaccines were dangerous in regard to prior to COVID-19, understand.
Autoimmune diseases are exponentially rising, and we are finding that the viruses and the bacteria that we're injecting into the body, along with the adjuvants, we heard earlier that there's no real concern about aluminum because it's such a small amount, and so it really shouldn't matter. But the kind of aluminum that we put into vaccines is a different kind of aluminum that we see environmentally. This is called a nanoparticle, and nanoparticles bind really tightly to the bacteria antigens, the virus antigens, the food protein antigens, and any other contaminants that are in the vaccines that we may not know about. And we know that the biochemical properties of nanoparticles is that they are capable of entering the brain. And so we have not evaluated the safety of the aluminum nanoparticle and its injection and where it goes when it gets into the body and whether it gets into the brain. Do vaccine ingredients belong in the brain? No. Do they get into the brain? No one has ever studied it. But animal studies using the same chemicals that are in vaccines that we give to children directly demonstrate that the vaccine ingredients do enter the brain. We are ignoring this information. There are scientists in Europe who've actually done studies on the aluminum nanoparticle and have shown that it can persist in the brain for years and decades. And so what we're seeing is a large outbreak of neurodevelopmental disabilities in adults, including Alzheimer's. And one of the main factors that they're finding in the brains of people with Alzheimer's is the aluminum nanoparticle that's directly related to the vaccines that we're giving. So we have never studied whether the aluminum that we're giving in vaccines gets into the brain, and we've never measured whether it stays in the brain and what it does if it does stay in the brain. But we do know that vaccines are supposed to cause inflammation in the body. But we have more than half of our children with chronic inflamed conditions. And we've never allowed ourselves to ask the question, if the vaccines cause inflammation acutely, do they continue to create inflammation chronically? We have 1 in 5 with neurodevelopmental disabilities, 1 in 10 with ADD and ADHD, 1 in 35 with autism, 1 in 11 with asthma, and 1 in 20 under the age of 5 with seizures.
That is some alarming stuff. And you've seen it before if you watch this show. But the point, again, is to say, okay, so Congress has been told this, but not a secret. They already knew. We know this stuff is in, there's a lot of alarmingly dangerous
materials in vaccines that even other doctors are saying, yeah, this stuff is just dangerous. And yet they're gonna quibble about, and rightly so though, but they're gonna at least point out that there's heavy metals in food. And it's just so silly that we can point about one. That's what Toby Rogers is making the point about. It's absurd. They're playing mental gymnastics here to make one scary, or rather probably just to get you focused elsewhere while we don't talk about the alarming point of this. But remember that we talked about the lipid nanoparticles, in regard to these, to both vaccines, both the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccine, the envelope in which delivers the spike protein, right? These are the very things, and the polyethylene glycol, that are creating and causing these problems. He's talking about those particles right there in that video. And this is before we got it. So it's like we know this stuff, and yet they just don't care. And not only that, they'll swing back around and tell you you're crazy for pointing out what that doctor just said, or what plenty of other doctors have pointed out long before we got here, as if it's just that wild. But here's the way this is developing, and this is getting into the definition of manipulation. Here's the definition on the online dictionary for vaccine. You'll notice that it interestingly now references a part about RNA. You might think, well, that's weird, because wouldn't that just get started? Yeah, a preparation of genetic material that is used by the cells of the body to produce an antigenic substance, such as a fragment of a virus spike protein. Weird. It's almost like they literally just took what they're claiming they have as a vaccine and put it in the definition so we can then go, yes, see, it's a vaccine. Didn't you read the definition? This is Orwellian. This is the kind of alarm. You don't just get, the point that they, definitions mean something. And there's a reason that this was, anybody's ever seen that there's a movie about this and more written about it as well, about the first time they decided to archive all of the words of the language, of the English language. It was an insurmountable feat, and most people thought it was impossible. The first dictionary was gigantic, but the point is that it meant something. We have to agree upon the meaning of these things, but to now have powerful people, just like in 1984, just kind of casually going around and altering definitions to suit what they want you to think things are, that then nothing means anything anymore. And that's where we are right now. But here's the point. Here is the archived version of the vaccine definition on the same website before they suddenly changed it. Right? This is January 8th, by the way. This was not long ago. It says, and this is before they changed it, a preparation of killed microorganisms, living attenuated organisms, or living fully virulent organisms that is administered to produce or artificially increase immunity to a particular disease. So even that, by the way, would have probably been altered over the time to fit the specific ways that they're making them today, which in and of itself shouldn't be the case. It should be a definition about the general idea that then should be met to be one, right? You don't get to just make up some new thing and be like, well, we're going to call it a vaccine. Let's add that to the definition. Especially because that's not actually what an mRNA thing is. It's an experimental injection. It is not classified as a vaccine. And by the way, it wouldn't have been had you looked at the definition before January 8th. But see, they don't want that because they want you to be told it's a vaccine and not be scared away by these evil conspiracy theorists that dare to show you the truth. So now they added it. So now, talking about inserting yourself with some kind of genetic material that alters your body to produce something it never did before and possibly fight this off and maybe make it way worse, depending on whether you have AD or not, or, you know, all the different pathogenic priming discussions we've had. And then we'll just call that a vaccine. That is crazy. And a lot of this is happening, guys. On the same point, we just talked about herd immunity. I wanted to point this out again because I thought, hey, this is a good point to reiterate this. And I thought, what's happened since then? And sure enough, something odd has happened since then. So this was on October 23rd. This was before they changed it. And you can clearly see it says herd immunity is the indirect protection from an infectious disease that happens when a population is immune either through vaccination or immunity developed through previous infection, which is what they don't want you to think about, that you don't need a vaccine to get herd immunity. That historically speaking, that's a term that existed before we were using our own technology. It was the thing that you got immunity from vaccines, and when most people got, or excuse me, you got immunity from viruses, and then, you know, through everyone just getting it, and then eventually when enough people got it, it was considered herd immunity. But I did a show on this, as you'll remember, and here's what the comparison was. Here's the actual article that you can watch the full video, watch it for yourself. But you'll remember, here's the one I just read. Here's what they changed it to. Herd immunity. This, now, this may be fuzzy for some people. This is because it's a video of a video. But it says herd immunity, also known as population immunity, is a concept used for vaccination. That's what this stated. In which population can be protected from a certain virus if a threshold of vaccination is reached. Period. No mention of any kind of natural herd immunity. Just basically vaccines do this and that's it. End of story. And that's what they were trying to manipulate people to. No, but this is BS. And you'll find that they know that because they've already changed it back. But it says herd down here, herd immunity is achieved by protecting people from a virus, not exposing them to it. Now, this is the game they played, because now he's swinging back around, by the way, after they changed it back again and claiming, no, we didn't say that. We were only really saying that we didn't mean that you should force people to be exposed to it in order to reach that natural herd immunity. That's what I meant in that sentence. And by the way, even when, it, as you can see, it says, read the October 12th media briefing for more. Even then, and even once they changed this again before they changed it back today or recently, they still didn't say that. They made it clear that it was only vaccination, as this first part is not hard to understand. They want you to think it's only vaccines. Here's what they changed it back to. I mean, this is incredibly dishonest. And understand, new information came along, and so we updated our information. No, this is them changing the definition to suit what they're telling you, and then either getting caught or realizing it wasn't getting pull, and so they just put it back in a really weird and dishonest way. It says now herd immunity, also known as population immunity, is the indirect protection from an infectious disease that happens when a population is immune, and they added back either through vaccination or immunity developed through previous infection. So wait a minute. How can you, so it's clear to see that they said the opposite in this right here. So were they wrong the middle time? Are they going to address that? Well, he did already, and he's claiming that he wasn't wrong. Anybody want to explain that? Now it says the WHO supports achieving herd immunity through vaccination, not by allowing a disease to spread through any segment of the population, as this would result in unnecessary cases and deaths. Okay, so now they're trying to pretend like, no, we just meant don't force it. So let's read what they said again. One more time. Herd immunity, also known as population immunity, is a concept used for vaccination. I don't notice any part in there where they were talking about previous infection. Well, let's keep going. In which a population can be protected from a certain virus if a threshold of vaccination is reached. Anybody want to tell me where he is now correct in claiming that he just meant to not for? I mean, you get what I'm saying with this. It's pathetic. It's absolutely pathetic that they think we're stupid enough to not see that he just lied, got caught, changed it back. It's just that, and you will have the media lapdogs that will continue to jump in your face and say, no, you're crazy. That's not true. That's not what happened. You don't remember, right? You're a conspiracy theorist. Didn't you see where he explained it? He came out and said, that's what happened, and you didn't listen to him? You don't trust him? And that's why you won't find this anymore. You'll only find this copy of it on places like this where we've looked at it, where we saved it, where we talked about it, or an archive version. But even that, I couldn't find this version, even on the archive version. It's crazy. But what's even crazier is that they act like you're a crazy conspiracy theorist for recognizing how obvious this is. Don't let them turn you against yourself. Don't let them create this division in your mind where you're going, am I crazy? Is it possible that I don't understand? Are they just that much smarter than me? Don't let that happen. All those things are certainly possible. As all of you in the show would know, question everything. But the reality is, it is that obvious. It is that clear. And they did lie to you. Now, going on to another discussion to finish this off in regard to the ID 2020 tie-in here, which, by the way, is sort of this interesting convergence of previous agendas going, Agenda 2030, Agenda 20, Greater Reset. I mean, it's all sort of the same thing. But in this case, we're talking about something that, yet again, is a very real-world scenario that, of course, the media has continued to act as crazy. It's a crazy conspiracy theory. I mean, there was even I probably talk about this in the tomorrow show, but there was an individual who was, challenging the Great Reset. And so he's coming out saying the Great Reset is not a conspiracy theory. It's real, based on real principles and real. And so that's him challenging us. And so I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, are we the ones saying it's a conspiracy theory? No, actually, we're the ones saying it's real. And that's the problem. So now they don't even know what to do. They're stuck in the middle between acting like what we're saying is fake news, yet making sure they know that this is real and good, but yet saying that it's, that we're calling it a conspiracy theory, but it's not, it's real. This is what happens when you're stuck in this absurd position. They're lying about everything. They can't move without lying about something. Telling us that we're calling it conspiracy theory is ridiculous, because we just pointed out the mainstream media came out and said the Great Reset's a conspiracy theory. It's just, it's absurd. But all they can do is go with the lie they have in front of them that day. But here is a narrative that is being claimed, it's just been disparaged from the very beginning as the most absurd thing in the world, despite the fact that there's active projects in with your government, whether in DARPA, whether in intelligence circles, creating all kinds of digital ID scenarios, tracking scenarios, immunity passport scenarios, medical pre-crime, all kinds of this stuff, nanotechnology for any number of things for the military. All of these things are real world. So it's really pathetic for them to act like they're just crazy. Now, you could argue that telling people that they will be in this vaccine might be crazy, but it's not really crazy. It's just something that could happen that you may think is not likely, but obviously anybody could put anything in that vaccine, right? To pretend like that's just not possible means you have no understanding of human history, or more so this government's history. Do I think that there's literally something in this right now? Probably no, but would it be possible? I'm right on the fence. I mean, they would absolutely do something like that, but I need facts and evidence to prove it, which is why I won't say that it's happening. And at the end of the day, I think it makes much more sense for them to create a situation where we have to have this thing for whatever, you know, all kinds of other aspects aside in regard to genetic modification, experimentation, but that we have to have this thing so they create immunity passports and control and biometric scans and 5G control network and all this stuff, and then slowly push that in. Perfusa injectable nano platforms and all the stuff that DARPA's actually working on. That seems like a more logical flow. You know, create a scenario where you can't engage in society without it, and then it doesn't seem like you're being forced. Right? That makes much more sense. But who knows? Who ultimately knows? Now, to the point here, this is something that's being discussed on Global Research. Now, I don't agree with everything that's being said here. There's a lot of things that are being said as if they're fact, which I think are maybe more so hypothetical, but I don't disagree with what he believes possible. Now it says, in Germany, the parliament ratified on 29th of January, 2021, the implementation of Agenda ID 2020. This is a centralized general electronic data collection of every citizen to which every government, agency, police, and possibly also the private sector would have access. And I think if we've learned anything in this whole process, that the private sector absolutely will have access. They are the people driving the agenda. And they'll claim that it's because public-private partnerships and they're working with the government and it's for your best interest and blah, 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 blah. It covers all that is known about an individual citizen. Now up to 200 points of information and possibly more as time goes on, from your bank account to your shopping habits, health records, vaccination records, of course, your political inclinations, and probably even your dating habits and other entries into your private sphere. Agenda ID 2020 was designed by Bill Gates and part of the vaccination package. It is backed by the Rockefeller Foundation, AccuCenter, the WEF, and Gavi, Global Alliance for Vaccine and Immunization, now simply called the Vaccine Alliance, also a Gates creation, 2001, with headquarters in Geneva, Switzerland. Now, Gavi is located next door to the WHO. Gavi is what's called a public-private partnership. This is exactly the same point. The public part being the WHO, plus a number of developing countries. The private partners are, of course, a series of pharmaceutical companies. Johnson & Johnson, GlaxoSmithKline, Merck, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Now, the point is, do you believe that pretending that those private sector entities are not going to have access? Well, of course, they're going to justify it because they need to be able to make the things and so on and so on. So this public-private is just a way to, it's a way to both allow access to these companies while giving cover to the government so you can't actually even access FOIA information if they decide to even give it to you. The German Extragovernmental Corona Commission, consisting of hundreds of medical doctors, virologists, immunologists, university professors, and lawyers, including Dr. Rainer Fulmich, which we've talked about, co-founder of the commission, has special concerns that the current corona vaccines, Pfizer and Moderna, may include nanoparticles that could be accessible to electromagnetic radiation, i.e. 5G and the subsequent 6G. Now remember, I mean, these are highly educated, highly credentialed people that are making these claims. This is precisely what was foreseen in the design of Agenda ID 2020, in which Bill Gates and Gavi had a major role. The adoption of Agenda ID 2020 still has to be approved by the German federal court, but there is a little chance that it will be rejected. Now, Keeping all this in mind, for those that are reading this, hearing this and going, oh, here's the fake news, it's all conspiracy theory, recognize that this is not new. Biometric tracking can ensure billions have immunity against COVID-19. This was posted on August 13, 2020. Right, so we're going to pretend like this is just that outlandish, that it's never, we're openly talking about some digital identification in regard to tracking not just your ID, but the flow and your bodily functions such as immunity in regard to these vaccines. I mean, this is very, very openly discussed, but yet they want to make it seem ridiculous in regard to how it could progress as we're seeing these things slowly go forward. Now, getting into ID 2020 and why this makes it alarming, it becomes quite a bit more interesting. Now, Nellie Tells points out, and this is really interesting, and this is what got it back in my mind, how collectively stupid are we, she points out. Here's a test. I read this article a while back, thought it was creepy, but just one writer's speculation. Then, she saw today that ID 2020 lists the article as a resource. Now, Whitney and I have talked about this. Check out what was discussed regarding mandatory digital IDs a year ago. Now, remember, we've read this before. I want to reiterate this now with what has happened since. This is 2018. Microsoft, the ID 2020 Alliance, Universal Digital Identification, and you. Last year, Microsoft joined ID 2020, a global alliance whose goal is to create universal digital identities for everyone. Interesting. Now, doesn't that seem to be where we're headed fast track right now? Yeah, it sure does. You're going to need that in regard to the way they're trying to keep all this going. So, at the very least, we should ask a question of whether or not their influence played a role on the direction that's being taken. Then ask whether or not it's possible that something like this could have been exacerbated to justify it. Then ask whether or not that thing could have been created entirely. Now, at what step you start at the Bach, that says a lot about you. But the point is, all of those are absolutely possible. And all of those have been done by this government in the past. Going forward, it says, our digital activity increasingly parallels our real-world activity. Participation in the modern economy, the ability to buy and sell, attain employment, healthcare, social services, and more are virtually impossible without a digital identity. Yes, yes, and sure as hell they're going to make it that way if not. In May of 2016, at the United Nations headquarters in New York, ID 2020, an alliance of governments, nonprofits, academia, and over 150 private sector companies and 11 United Nations agencies collaborated on how to provide a unique digital identity to everyone on the planet. Think about that kind of coordination and what that could have led to in May of 2016. Interesting timing. Right in the beginning of Donald Trump's administration. So we're talking about something when they gathered together. And remember, Donald Trump was the one who, both him and both NIAID and directly from his administration, gave billions to Gavi. Billions. So the point is to ask yourself whether this could have been the beginning of some direction that we're seeing today. Most coverage of the ID 2020 Alliance focuses on its noble objective. Its noble objective. Don't insert your own opinions in there, journalist. To provide digital identities to over 1 billion refugees, women, children, and others without any form of identification. Of course, it's only about refugees, right? But by the way, I was going to talk about it in the beginning of the show, but I put it off to try to make this shorter. A great article by Robert Inlakesh today that I'm going to talk about more tomorrow, as well as a great and a very important ruling from the ICC in regard to Palestine that was going to hopefully change everything. We'll get into that tomorrow. But interesting talking about refugees. Making the point that as we're screaming about kids in cages being stopped, whatever, about domestic policy, Biden's administration is actively continuing to bolster policy that creates the exact scenario of putting kids and women and people in cages in Syria. No one cares about that, though, right? Arming and funding and controlling and helping the very people that continue to, you know, decapitate children and lock people in cages. That's all good over in Syria, though. Interesting. But it says the message of providing digital identification for this invisible portion of the Earth's population. Well, that seems to make more sense to me. It's about making sure we can track the people that are invisible to them. To enable their participation in society places a human face over the true mission. Oh, what's the true mission? Well, we'll get to that in a minute. It also creates a rallying point that this open alliance hopes their other entities will, like Microsoft, embrace and become a part of this global effort. The fundamental mission of creating a universal identification system that incorporates every person on the globe using modern technology and the support of various governments, financial institutions, and more is the goal hidden behind the humanitarian cause. Yep. And you know what? That seems much more ominous than it did back when they wrote this article. So we're talking about all the same people. I was going to say probably only because I don't know who was all involved at this, but everyone we're talking about that you're thinking about right now was involved in Event 201. And we're talking about them gathering together with companies and media and governments and organizing what they're telling you was their hidden goal. Creating a universal identification system that incorporates every person on the globe. Now, how could they make that happen, right? Because how could you effectively create this simultaneously across multiple governments in the world that have different opinions, agendas, and policies and politics? Well, you create a pandemic. Certainly. That's just one possibility. I'm sure you could think of others. Not to say that that's what happened. Going forward, according to the Alliance's governance material, quote, by 2030, it aims to have facilitated the scaling of a safe, verifiable, persistent digital identity system. So as we're sitting here at 2021, it's interesting to see that this is clearly the direction we're on, but that's not hard to see because they told us that was going to be happening. The scaling of safe, verifiable, persistent digital identification system consistent with the sustainable development goals agreed upon by the United Nations. Now you can see that this whole Agenda 2030, the sustainability, all this stuff is all the same agenda. The Greater Reset, it's all the same thing. Not literally, but it's what same driving entities. Now understand the idea of sustainable anything is not bad, but the way that what they mean when they're talking about sustainability, yes, I do think that's bad. Because it's not actually about sustainable living for everybody. I won't get into that now. We've talked about it in the past, but there's a lot going on there. Its short-term focus toward that goal is the development and testing of the best technology solutions for digital identity and working with governments and other entities in their implementation. The focus on the 1.5 billion people without identification is part of that short-term vision. So you can just see the grand idea, which is now happening, of all these governments working together to drive towards this goal. The long-term vision revolves around the Alliance's case for action, which states a convergence of trends provides an unprecedented opportunity to make a coordinated, concerted push towards the goal of universal digital identity. Wait a minute. Is that what, did it just say what I think? The long-term vision revolves around the Alliance's case for action, which states a convergence of trends, or you could argue, I mean, saying a convergence of trends could mean a lot of different things. But just fill in what you want right there in regard to things happening at the right time. A convergence of certain, when you think about trends, think about things people think, the issues of the day, right? We're talking about a convergence of certain circumstances. And it provides an unprecedented opportunity to make a coordinated, concerted push towards the goal of universal digital identity. Is that not the Great Reset? That is what they're saying. I mean, that's not even what I'm thinking they're saying. They are telling you this has provided an unprecedented opportunity to make a concerted push to make life better and blah, whatever. Okay. So are we not missing think about the connection there. They're telling you that they need to wait for a convergence of trends, a certain amount of circumstances at the same time that would provide them the unprecedented opportunity to do this. Tell me that's not where we are right now. Now, again, is that because they chose to use this and now are now stretching it out to make sure they achieve it? Or did they make it happen to do so? Who ultimately knows? But that is alarming to me. Now, it says those trends include political accord among the United Nations members, growing global connectivity, emerging technologies, and global calls for a new model of identity. Now, that's what they say. Of course, that could be what they're talking about, or it could be a lot of other converging trends. The point is, those things are happening. Is it because of this or because they're driving it? Ultimately, don't know. But the political accord among United Nations members that's arguable. But I'm not going to go. The point is that those converging trends could be whatever they ultimately say it is today, not what they said in 2018. But clearly it's happening. Now, this says, as a founding member of the ID 2020 Alliance, Microsoft shared that it its developers and alliance partners would be collaborating on a blockchain-based open source identity system, which is why this is so alarming to me. And we've talked about this also before. The cryptocurrency system using body activity data from Microsoft technology licensing, and this is an alarming thing. It really is. As it says, a new patent application by Microsoft details a way to use bodily functions such as a brain activity to mine cryptocurrency. The application entitled Cryptocurrency System Using Body Activity Data explains how a brainwave or body heat emitted from the user when the user performs the task provided by an information service provider, so when you do what they tell you to do, such as viewing an advertisement or using certain entertainment internet services, can be used in the mining process. So they're going to be paying you to exist, essentially, and then if you do what you're told, you get more. By tracking brainwaves when someone watches an advert, Microsoft hopes to use the data generated as a proof of work. So tracking you, maybe that's happening now. I mean, realistically, think about this, guys. There are so many things happening right now that they're not even telling you about. They're not even trying to justify. You're just in danger, so this is happening. So maybe they decide this is for your best interest, and we can't talk about it because it'll get bogged down by discussion. We'll just gotta do it for everyone's best interest. This is the validation of a transaction or completion of a task in the blockchain system and the way in which creation of currency is validated in the currency model. Microsoft envisions the users being rewarded for allowing their bodies to be monitored in this way by paying them in cryptocurrency for performing specific tasks, as well as brainwaves and heat. The patent also suggests using body fluid flow and organ activity and movement. This is also, you know, cutting in on the idea of medical pre-crime. They obviously can be used different ways to track a range of tasks, including using social media, search engines, emails, visiting websites, using chatbots, all of which is actively being monitored through, you know, just for everyone's best interest, of course. That's scary. This is the actual patent. You can look through it for yourself. But going back to the article, just understanding in 2018, this is what we're talking about then. Collaborating on a blockchain-based product that is being tied in with all of this stuff. But to end on this, well, this last part, and then the ending is really alarming. It says this onboarding of even the disenfranchised onto the digital landscape is paramount to the ID 2020 Alliance's goal. That's funny. They didn't put an apostrophe right there. I always noticed stuff like that. To provide a universally accepted identification system for everyone on the planet. So that's where we're going to pretend like this is not an obvious tie-in with that goal. There's more coordination here than we realize. But understand what they're talking about with the disenfranchised. You and I, the people that do not feel a part of their system, that do not want to be part of that system, they're paramount to their goal is getting you in the system. That's what that says. Provide a universally accepted identification system for everyone on the planet, but making sure that the disenfranchised are the paramount goal. I think we know that. I think this has shown us this from the very beginning. And then under casually at the bottom, obvious concerns, right? Burying a lead, if you will. The Alliance stresses that digital identity is the cornerstone of international development. And believes a digital identity should be with a person from birth to death. So sort of like, an injection or a stamp or, you know, something that you can't just toss aside, right? Understand what they're saying here. They're not saying, because right now we have that, right? We already have things online that have all of your information, right? A person, you can look up, you know, Ryan Christian and find all of the data about my birth certificate and whatever else if you're a government entity. Clearly, that's not what they're talking about because that's there. What they're talking about is you, your body. You, from birth to death, have accessible digital identity on you all the time. That's what they're talking about. That's why this is talking about invasive from your body, your brain, your body, your flow of your body fluids. And that's why we're also talking about things like your Perfusa injectable nanoplatforms. The things that they claim are fake news. Yet Matt Hepburn on the Operation Warp Speed Task Force, or whatever you want to call it, it's a military thing, is actively talking. That was his primary focus. Monsef Salawi, the czar, its primary focus was on bioimplantable electronics. I mean, that's what these guys did. So when this is what they're talking about all the way back then, and suddenly all the players that are involved with exactly this kind of stuff start finding their way in positions that don't seem to be related to that technology, that should be alarming to us. They said, here's what we want to do, and then got real quiet about it as they do it. That's what it feels like to me. But remember, to reiterate the point here, your digital identity that they're creating with things we just talked about, they want to be with you from birth to death. It's not something you can just casually throw away. This objective being pursued by a global collaborative raises many ethical concerns. Yeah, if the lack of a digital identity under the current paradigm, so as it is right now, limits participation in the modern economy, right? So not having a social security number or so on, which we know dramatically limits your engagement. They're saying if that's the case now, the lack of the same under a singular globally recognized system could prevent participation entirely. Yeah, you don't say. That's exactly the point, guys. They're creating a system from which you can be kicked, yet they'll still be able to track you with your data on your body that won't go away, but they can turn you off to where you can't engage with that society. That's the point. It says, if the alliance's goal is a globally recognized digital identity for everyone from birth to death, will that become a global mandate? How will it be enforced and by whom? What happens to these individuals who are unwilling to participate? Will they be persecuted? And how will the implementation of identification evolve with technology beyond smartphones? Will wearables, implants, like those being used in Swedish subways or some form of digital tattoo become the norm? Look at that, guys. If I talk about this stuff today, you're crazy. You stupid, crazy conspiracy. But they'll just casually talk. This is probably, will they do this? Will they do that? I thought those things were fake news. I guess they're only fake news when we use them in the right context. But understand what they're telling, and remember the point that Nelly made. This, and again, that we talked about back in the day, this is cited as a resource for the actual ID 2020. So they're not shying away from these questions. The point is, guys, they know what's coming. Of course they're going to be forcing you to participate. Of course people will be persecuted to one degree or another, whether social or financial exclusion. You'll be manipulated into joining. And yes, it'll evolve to wearables and implantables. That's what these guys have already said. Nonmansif Salawi, the czar of Operation Warp Speed for the vaccine, has openly stated this is the future. This is what will be happening. But we're all crazy, right, guys? As more and more transactions become digital in nature and are built around a single global identification standard. I just hate the way it's even nature's included in that. As more and more transactions become digital in nature and are built around a single global identification standard, supported by Microsoft, of course, no big deal there, the question of who will govern this evolving global community and economy becomes relevant. Yeah. Yeah, just an ending positive. I mean, that's like the most important. Who's going to rule this what's like the worst word for this? Who's going to rule this kingdom that they, you know, this obvious, it's a authoritarian structure. There's a ruler. There's somebody who controls the flow of data, who controls the flow of an accessibility of your implantables. And that's, I mean, you can argue that'll be ruled by some democracy. How's that working out for our quote unquote democracy? It's our fake democracy that got us here. Especially, it says, since non-participants in this system would be unable to buy or sell goods or services. Yeah. So it's almost like they're threatening there at the end. They already stated that point. So now they're basically saying, well, you know, is that an issue? Is it a problem that people will be kicked out if they don't participate? Well, we'll leave it open-ended. You can decide for yourself. 2018. The question is, guys, whether this was, you know, it doesn't have to be the beginning point, but obviously a point in this process that we're seeing that shows you what they're building and tells you what their goals are. To finish off today, as Philip Watson points out, boom, the awakening. Former conservative leader Sir Lane Duncan Smith said, quote, "We have to be careful we don't hand over the government to the scientists. When we say we're following the science, sometimes it has been a case of following the scientists." Thank you. Somebody with some common sense. It doesn't mean that they're necessarily always wrong. The point is that it has to be based on merit and actual facts and science, not what people with powerful positions say, or even what scientists say. It needs to be based on the actual data and then confirmed or peer-reviewed. That's not happening anymore. And you can see, as he screams that maybe we shouldn't give the scientists more power, here's what Whitney Webb shared today. Holy crap, holy crap. Nevada bill would allow tech companies to create governments. This is not a joke. This is not something from The Onion, although it should be. It's almost as if they took the most absurd, unbelievable step forward and that, like, parody-wise, that we would go, that can't be true, and said, you know, let's just give these Silicon Valley guys their own governments and just be done with it. Now, whether or not this is to justify the quote-unquote breaking up of these companies, which, you know, and really just more government control, I can't even fathom how this could ever pass, but who knows? The point is this, whether a game, a piece being played in their manipulation or not, this is not a joke. This is what's happening, and we can all see it. It's never been this clear. It really hasn't. So, as always, the time is now to share the information, guys. Get the views out, get this out in front of as many people as possible. About an hour, not too bad. We'll see if we can keep doing that in the future, but there's a lot more to talk about, as always, guys. Please take the time to share this information. Please take the time to get it in front of anybody you think could benefit from this. And as always, don't yell, don't confront. Be the opposite of what we see the people on the, you know, caught up in the mainstream manipulation are. Be the opposite of that. You know, plant the seed, as I say, and if they start screaming and yelling, just back away. Circle back a week later, water the seed a little bit. Hey, did you take a look at that? Oh, okay, never mind. You know, and just never be what they think you are. Be better. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
Today, the job of building this nation geographically is completed. There are no new frontiers within our borders. So, to what new horizons can we look now? Where are tomorrow's opportunities? What's ahead for you, for your children? The frontiers of the future are not on any map. They are in the test tubes and laboratories of the great industries.
The Jacobardi case was one of the great judicial moments in world history, and the public was totally unaware it was actually happening as the process was being engaged. General Electric and Professor Jacobardi went to the patent office with a little microbe that eats up oil spills. They said they had modified this microbe in the laboratory, and therefore it was an invention. The patent office, the U.S. government, took a look at this, quote, invention, and they said, no way. The patent statutes don't cover living things. This is not an invention. Turned down. Then General Electric and Dr. Jacobardi appealed to the U.S. Customs Court of Appeal. And to everyone's surprise, by a 3-2 decision, they overrode the patent office. We bring good things to life. And they said, this microbe looks more like a detergent or a reagent than a horse or a honeybee. I laughed because they didn't understand basic biology. It looked like a chemical to them. Had it had an antenna or eyes or wings or legs, it would never have crossed their table and been patented. Then the patent office appealed. And what the public should realize now is the patent office was very clear that you can't patent life. My organization provided the main amicus curiae brief. If you allow the patent on this microbe, we argued, it means that without any congressional guidance or public discussion, corporations will own the blueprints of life. When they made the decision, we lost by 5-4, and Chief Justice Warren Burger said, sure, some of these are big issues, but we think this is a small decision. 7 years later, the U.S. Patent Office issued a one-sentence decree. You can patent anything in the world that's alive except a full-birth human being.